William Morrow and Harper Audio present Brazen and the Beast, The Bare Knuckle Bastards, Book 2, by Sarah McLean, performed by Justine Eyre. Chapter 1. September 1837, Mayfair. In 28 years and 364 days, Lady Henrietta Sedley liked to think that she'd learned a few things. She'd learned, for example, that if a lady could not get away with wearing trousers, an unfortunate reality for the daughter of an earl, even one who had begun life without title or fortune, then she should absolutely ensure that her skirts included pockets. A woman never knew when she might require a bit of rope or a knife to cut it. She'd also learned that any decent escape from her Mayfair home required the cover of darkness and a carriage driven by an ally. Coachmen tended to talk a fine game when it came to keeping secrets, but they were ultimately beholden to those who paid their salaries. An important addendum to that particular lesson was this: the best of allies was often the best of friends. And perhaps first on the list of things she had learned in her lifetime was how to tie a Carrick Bend knot. She'd been able to do that for as long as she could remember. With such an obscure and uncommon collection of knowledge, one might imagine that Henrietta Sedley would have known precisely what to do in the likelihood she discovered a human male bound and unconscious in her carriage. One would be incorrect. In point of fact, Henrietta Sedley would never have described such a scenario as a likelihood. True, she might have been more comfortable on London's docks than in its ballrooms, but Hattie's impressive collection of life experience lacked anything close to a criminal element. And yet, here she was, pockets full, dearest friend at her side, standing in the pitch dark on the night before her 29th birthday, about to steal away from Mayfair for an evening of best-laid plans, and... Lady Eleonora Maidwell whistled, low and unladylike, at Hattie's ear. Daughter of a duke and the Irish actress he loved so well that he'd made her a duchess, Nora had the kind of brashness that was allowed in those with impervious titles and scads of money. "There's a bloke in the gig, Hattie." Hattie did not look away from the bloke in question. "Yes, I see that." "There wasn't a bloke in the gig when we hitched the horses." "No, there wasn't." They'd left the hitched and most definitely empty carriage in the dark rear drive of Sedley House, not three quarters of an hour earlier, before hiking upstairs to exchange carriage-hitching dresses for attire more appropriate for their evening plans. At some point between corset and coal, someone had left her an extraordinarily unwelcome package.
"Seems we would have noticed a bloke in the gig," Nora said.
"I should think we would have," came Hattie's distracted reply. "This is really just awful timing." Nora cut her a look.
"Is there a good time to find a man bound and unconscious in one's carriage?"
Hattie imagined there wasn't, but he could have selected a different evening. This is a terrible birthday gift. She squinted into the dark interior of the carriage.
"Do you think he's dead?"
"Please don't let him be dead." Silence, then a thoughtful.
"Does one store dead men in carriages?"
Nora reached forward, her coachman's coat pulling tight over her shoulders, and poked the possibly dead man in question. He did not move.
"He's not moving," she added with an unhelpful shrug. "Could be dead."
Hattie sighed, removing a glove and leaning into the carriage to place two fingers to the man's neck.
"I'm sure he's not dead." "What are you doing?" Nora whispered urgently. "If he's not, you'll wake him."
"That wouldn't be the worst thing in the world," Hattie pointed out. "Then we could ask him to kindly exit our conveyance and we could be on our way."
"Oh, yes, this brute seems like precisely the kind of man who would immediately do just that and not immediately take his revenge. He'd no doubt doff his cap and wish us a fine good evening."
"He's not wearing a cap," Hattie said, unable to refute any of the rest of the assessment of the mysterious, likely dead man. He was very broad and very solid, and even in the darkness, she could tell that this wasn't a man with whom one took a turn about a ballroom. This was the kind of man who ransacked a ballroom.
"What do you feel?" Nora pressed.
"No pulse," though she wasn't exactly sure where one would find a pulse.
"But he's..."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?